Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, how a new ruling by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton could threaten election security. Grifters are cashing in on false claims of election fraud, and how people don't realize the big impact of little inconveniences on voter participation. This is Texas Matters. From Texas Public Radio, I'm David Martin Davies. When Attorney General Ken Paxton released an opinion last week about inspecting Texans' anonymous ballots, he declared that it was, quote, a crucial new tool in the fight for free and fair elections and should boost confidence in Texas's elections and promote transparency in government. However, that's not how experts on elections see it. They say this ruling does just the opposite, that it opens the door to chaos at county elections offices, exposes election clerks to possible criminal charges, and reduces the security of ballots, possibly to the point where it could be impossible to know who won a close election. What it does is declare that cast ballots are public records, which are available to be inspected by anyone as soon as the day after an election. To untangle this, I needed help, and I got it from Jessica Hoosman, the editorial director of VoteBeat. VoteBeat is a nonprofit newsroom covering voting policy and election administration.
So what it says is that last week on the 17th, Ken Paxton released an opinion that, in summary, says that anyone, theoretically, can get access to ballots almost immediately after they're cast. And this really bucks 35 years, well, almost 35 years of pretty clear precedent in Texas. State and federal law read that ballots must be preserved for 22 months. And previously, records requests asking for ballots before that time have been denied under that statute. Paxton interprets the law, and he offers a poor legal basis as to why, experts tell me, that because it is inherently a public record, it is available immediately. This contradicts current law and definitely opens up election administrators to criminal legal exposure because unauthorized access to this information is a Class A misdemeanor.
When we have the ballots after we vote, there's this whole process of canvassing and certifying. So where does the allowing people to come in and start looking at the ballots under Paxton, where does that fit in there?
Yeah, so, you know, there's been a huge wave of interest in getting access to ballots across the country, as I'm sure you and your listeners have followed, right? There was the Cyber Ninjas debacle in Arizona. People in Georgia went to court over the idea that they wanted ballot images, which the state of Georgia does not keep. This is sort of a common request from people who believe that the 2020 election was stolen.
A lot of people call these things fraudits.
Fraudits, exactly. Yes. And so Paxton's opinion, in some sense, would make these far easier to accomplish if counties choose to agree with his legal interpretation of Texas law. It's important to note that this opinion does not have the weight of law. It is simply the attorney general offering a public interpretation of the laws as they stand. Counties are not compelled to follow this, but what it will do is give Republican and right-wing activists cause to sue counties because we have these conflicting opinions about whether or not this information is public before the 22-month retention period.
So if they do this action, it's the day after the election, we have some activist saying, I want to be able to count the ballots right away, and suddenly they can come in and start thumbing through all the ballots and counting them up? I mean, it boggles the mind. I don't know how this works.
It doesn't work is the thing, right? Like the counties cannot possibly accommodate this type of request. So let's consider what happens to the ballots after they're cast, right? They are counted by the machine, but then the county has to canvass the ballots and confirm that the machine count was accurate. That takes several days. And elections in Texas are not formally certified until more than a week after they happen. And so the county isn't even done looking at or organizing or confirming the results of the election for several days, which means that in theory, these people would get access to the ballots while the county still needs them. Obviously, they can't accommodate that. And then these ballots are required to be protected under federal law. So the Civil Rights Act of 1960 requires that all ballots be kept secure for 22 months. And that's to accommodate legal and valid challenges to the results, recounts, any number of things that require the chain of custody of ballots to be very carefully maintained so that county officials can ensure that a vote that was counted is the vote that was cast. And by allowing the public access to these documents so soon, it makes it impossible for county election administrators to appropriately administer a recount in a way that that a court or even a candidate requesting a recount would find valid. They would just have no ability to ensure that all of the ballots were there and in the appropriate order.
So we have these federal and state laws that requires the ballots to be kept secure for 22 months after an election. And that does allow for recounts and challenges. But doing it with this frauded system where you have basically anybody, they can be from Texas, they can be from anywhere in the country, and they can say, I want access to those ballots. And are you saying that that's an unsecure way of handling these ballots, and they and things can get messed up, and we may end up not even knowing who won an election?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, let's think about what Tarrant County went through earlier this year. So VoteBeat covered a story a couple of months ago, or a couple of weeks ago. Our reporter, Natalia Contreras, who's our main Texas reporter, covered the news that an activist group had spent several weeks occupying the Tarrant County Elections Office, going over more than 300,000 ballots cast in the March 2020 primary. And in order to accommodate that request, Heider Garcia, the election administrator there, had to reserve an entire room in the county office for them, which he made available for several weeks, which the vast majority of Texas counties cannot accommodate. Of course, Tarrant County is far larger than most of the 254 counties in Texas. And they had to set up a live video feed to record every single thing that these folks were doing with the ballots to ensure that they had record of who was touching them and when, because they couldn't afford to have a staff member in that room constantly monitoring their behavior. And so that's the kind of steps that counties are forced to go through, given how important ballot security is. And given that Ken Paxton has been ranting about ballot security almost every single day since he took office as a state representative, it sort of defies logical reasoning that this opinion is valid, even in his own mind.
We have these grifters that are showing up with these demanding ballot security, election security. We've seen them across the country. They're raising money. They are filing open records requests. They're bothering election officials, and they're making bank off of these wild allegations. Does this give those grifters juice?
Yeah, you know, I think it does. I mean, there's a very clear example of what you're saying, which is that, so Ken Paxton released this opinion on the 17th, which was late last week. And then over the weekend, Mike Lindell of MyPillow fame held a bizarre rally in which he told everyone to request their ballots. And so states across the country have received a wave of requests for such information. And in Texas, they were bolstered by the fact that 2 days before Mike Lindell told them to request this information, the attorney general said they could have it. And so these people are already calling the Texas Secretary of State's office, demanding to know why counties won't immediately give them the records. And counties are already being walloped with threats of lawsuits over this. Like, this has a profound and immediate impact on all counties in Texas.
Jessica Hoosman is the editorial director of VoteBeat, which is a nonprofit newsroom covering voting policy and election administration. They're online at votebeat.org. Eric Hoffer was an American moral and social philosopher. He was the author of 10 books and was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 1983. He's got a lot of great quotes. One of my favorite is, "People who bite the hand that feeds them usually lick the boot that kicks them." And, "Every great cause begins as a movement, becomes a business, and eventually degenerates into a racket." One could say that we're well into the racket phase of the voter fraud scare. Millions of dollars are being raised using scary emails, videos, and political speeches about voter fraud, with nothing to show for it except the enrichment of election fraud grifters. Texas Monthly's Mimi Schwartz writes about it in her article, "How True the Vote Fabricates Claims of Election Fraud for Fun and Profit."
Got a couple of people, whether they believe it or not, keep trying to inform the public about voter fraud that just does not exist. So they have been involved in, for instance, Dinesh D'Souza's documentary, and I put that in quotes, released earlier in the year, that purports to show analytics developed by this pair that allegedly prove voter fraud. And, you know, the movie's been debunked by, you know, I'm sorry, the lamestream media has done a pretty good job of proving their claims wrong. And you know, I think if we remember from the Trump era, an incredible number of judges have said, there is no voter fraud. It just doesn't exist. But the big lie persists. So here we are.
True the Vote, they've been around for a while, Houston-based. Mm-hmm. They have been accused in the past of engaging in active voter intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
But really, Catherine Engelbrecht, she's on the right-wing media. She shows up at CPAC warning about this voter fraud and able to raise money off of this.
Yeah.
And her partner has been active in Republican politics and attempts at governance and making money off of that in the past in Texas.
Yeah.
Their track record is not good.
No, they've never produced any real evidence of voter fraud. And yet, you know, I think thanks to Donald Trump, mainly their influence has grown so that they're now kind of part of the national big lie scene. I've noticed that Stacey Abrams in Georgia has had to fuss, you know, fight and fuss with them. And I heard from the Harris County attorney also that they're back working in Harris County again. I think, you know, and also in Arizona. So
are they about election integrity, or are they about fleecing these people who believe their lies? You talked about this film that they were executive producers on, 2000 Mules, written by Dinesh D'Souza.
Dinesh D'Souza,
He is a proven liar. Uh-huh. And he was given a pardon by Donald Trump.
You're right. He was pardoned by Trump.
They are making money off of these claims.
Right. Well, I think, you know, it's kind of sad. I keep going back to the January 6th hearings where there was a man who, you know, was sort of, his name was Ayers, and he had had a pretty nice life until he got involved at January 6th. And it, you know, he was prosecuted. He went to jail. It's ruined his life. And at the end, Liz Cheney asked him, you know, well, what do you think? And he, you know, do you have any regrets, whatever? And he said, you know, I wish I'd read more. And I, you know, I feel for all these people who might as well set their money on fire. There's no voter fraud. So where's the money going? They, you know, no one's been able to find it. So their money is going into somebody's pocket. The main thing that's interesting is that they have been sued by a man in North Carolina who wrote a check for them for $2 million. And, you know, again, it was after the election, after Trump lost, and they promised him they could prove that there had been voter fraud, and they never did. They took the money. Nothing ever happened. The guy sued. It's still, you know, a judge overturned the case. It ended up in Ken Paxton's lap, and nothing is going to happen. We just found out the other day that Ken Paxton has hosted screenings of this movie. So I think it's frightening.
Election grifters, these people who claim voter fraud, and they have these fake audits, and they're able to generate money, and they raise and they make these outlandish claims, and this is eroding our democracy when they say these things. And so it's not just about grifting and raising money, but also we're weakening the trust that we have in our elections.
Yeah, I think it's terrible. I mean, it concerns me much. The fate of democracy concerns me a whole lot more than these people making money off people who, you know, who've never really tried to think very critically or protect themselves from grifters. But I think the more they erode our institutions, the bigger danger we're in.
Mimi Schwartz is an executive editor at Texas Monthly. Voter suppression used to be so much more obvious in the days before the Voting Rights Act. There were impossible literacy tests and thugs with axe handles standing next to the door to polling sites. Now voter suppression is much more about dissuasion, subtly convincing people not to vote because it's such a hassle and your vote doesn't really matter anyway. This is why some people say voter suppression today is like death by a thousand cuts. It's one little thing after another, but it's cumulative. And soon voter turnout is low in certain populations, and these people end up without political power, needed to demand needed government services, judicial fairness, and control over their own bodies. So how effective are the little hassles that pop up on election day to keep you from voting? A new study finds that they can be a significant barrier. People who are impacted by them don't even realize it. The study is Americans Discount the Effect of Friction on Voter Turnout. Wendy Wood is a professor of psychology and business at the University of Southern California.
When people go to vote, there are some things that make it easier for all of us to vote, like if we have polling places close by. There are things that make it harder to vote. If you have to have a signature that matches exactly on an envelope, that makes it a little bit more difficult to vote. Even weather, when it rains, voting turnout is decreased. So there's a variety of small things that we think maybe shouldn't be really impactful, but actually do influence people's likelihood of voting. We call these friction because they get in the way of people's ability, willingness to vote.
The amount of friction, is it directly related to voter participation?
In research that has been done on this particular topic, they find that these sort of incidental barriers that should be easy to surmount, like shortened polling hours or long wait lines, long distance that you have to travel to the polls, all of these do reduce turnout, yes.
Did you look at who is subjected to friction?
Our study was done to try to understand how voters think about friction, whether they recognize that these small barriers actually do impact turnout. And what we found is that people are not very aware of this. When we ask people what influences whether Americans will vote, they don't tend to think of these barriers. They think of our interest in politics, our commitment to a political party, which are important, certainly, but they're not, in our research, more important than these friction barriers. Beliefs, political commitment, a sense of duty, all do drive voting, but so do these more incidental features, like how easy is it for you to get to the polls? Can you get time off work? Do you have childcare? Are the polls open when you are off work? These are the sorts of things that are very important in influencing voting, but people tend not to realize their importance when we ask them.
So when you talk to people and you ask them about, are you going to vote? I mean, I've done this myself, walk around on election day, says, are you voted? Are you going to vote? And I get responses like, well, no. And because it's too hard or doesn't matter if I vote or not, I'm busy, or, you know, I just don't care. You wonder if there's friction involved here that people feel like they don't want to vote, and whether or not they have actually have been voter suppressed and they don't even realize it.
Well, that is actually an interesting implication of our findings. We did a formal survey where we assessed registered voters in five states that were likely to be swing states in the last presidential election. And we assessed them before and after they voted. And we found that friction was really important, but that people don't recognize it. As you're saying, people tend to assume that voting is something that's under their own control, that it's something that all citizens who are interested in politics can do. It's our duty. And they don't realize how much their own behavior is influenced by these incidental barriers that get in the way of voting. Part of what we found also that I think is most interesting in this study is that the people who really overlooked these barriers, they were the ones who were more likely to support restrictions on voting. So voter restrictions are major concern right now in America, whether we should impose more restrictions on voting or not. And the people who think that these barriers don't make much difference, either to themselves or to other people, are the ones who support more restrictions on voting, such as shorter polling hours and fewer polling places. So it makes sense that if you're not realizing how much impact these barriers have on your own ability to vote, that you tend to support policies that are more restrictive of voting.
It would seem that the people who or pay attention to voting, politicians, are well aware of friction and these artificial barriers that can be thrown up to dissuade people from voting. And they can be anything from a prohibition on passing out of water to people who are in line to vote, to establishing a voter ID requirement, or even creating an atmosphere that if you vote, you are putting yourself and your family in some sort of legal jeopardy for some sort of prosecution. All of these things could add up to make people think when voting just isn't worth it. Have you noticed that there is, does seem to be one party more than the other that's more interested in creating friction?
Well, we do know that in general, more restrictions on voting have been proposed by Republicans. I don't think that's controversial at all right now. Our results suggest that it may be in part because people don't realize how powerful these small barriers are. So it may not be active voter suppression in all cases. It may instead be that there's a failure to recognize how powerful just having polls open long enough for people to get to the polls is in ensuring that everyone votes. So it's an it provides another way of thinking, perhaps, about these different restrictions, which is not to say that there aren't multiple motives for the proposed voter restrictions. There certainly are. But this is one of them, we believe, is that just people fail to recognize how powerful these things are.
So the question I've seen asked before is how easy should we make voting? And depending on where you sit, the answer could be we should make voting as easy as possible. And that you're saying if we do that, we will see greater voter participation. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep.
Do we know if individuals who maybe they're hourly workers or low income, do we have an idea, any kind of demographic that may reflect a higher degree of friction?
Well, certainly we do find that people who don't own automobiles, people who have to get childcare in order to vote, and people who can't easily take time off work for going to vote. So these would be people who don't have jobs that allow them to take time off work. These people are most affected by these small frictions because they have less control over their work day.
Voter registration, major part of being able to vote is going through this process. Having, in some states, they have same day automatic voter registration, electronic voter registration. But in places like Texas, it has to be done way in advance. It can't be done online. It has to be done with paper and pen. It's a convoluted process. Does that sound like friction to you?
Yes, it does. We did not study that, to be clear. Our research was only with registered voters, already registered voters, but that is exactly the kind of friction that gets in people's way and makes it harder for people to vote.
Wendy Wood is a professor of psychology and business at the University of Southern California. An update on the story we brought you 2 weeks ago about the Texas Republican Party suing to kick libertarians off the ballot. The GOP lost at the Texas Supreme Court, keeping the libertarian candidates on the ballot. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters episodes on our website at tpr.org. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast, and tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.